Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we'll be talking the value of straw. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at some new technology coming making its way to the farm from the military. Egg History Minute, we'll talk about the history of wheat in Wisconsin. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomber.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomber.
Let's get tilthy.
Whoa. Changing it up
there. Yeah, I'm bringing a new one.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy.
Just seeing if you're awake this morning, Matt.
I am awake. You just about railroaded the whole thing.
Like, I did.
Nope, that Todd threw a curveball. What's going on?
At least let us know that's coming.
Nope. Just had to throw one in there. So
surprise.
Try new catchphrases.
Okay.
So each week it's going to be a little different.
Well, I didn't sign on to that. No, it was just going
to
be.
You just said phrases. That's multiple. True, right? So now you have to come up with more
just
different ways of working tilth into there.
Or he's challenging me for a different one.
There you go. So we're kind of in a drought for this year. Like, it hasn't rained significantly.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm using that word right. It's been so long.
I think you're not, but
no. Though it did rain north of us like almost an inch the other day, but for the most part, we have not had significant rainfall in like a week.
Did you know they're bringing Country USA back very soon? So
it's called something else though.
Crossroads 41.
That's what it is. Yes.
So yes. So I will. Mark the tape that whenever that comes to town, we'll be back and very wet.
Full blown.
Yes.
That's why I left, right?
Right. Well, right.
Every year it was just a mud hole of people getting stuck and guys. I mean, the guys that with the tractors were making money pulling everybody out. Right. But
I've gotten stuck there. I mean, granted, it was with the two-wheel drive Dodge Neon, but
That was years ago.
It was many years ago.
Wow.
Is that pre or post logging truck?
That was
incident.
That was post the logging
truck. Do tell. I don't know if I even know a logging truck incident.
Todd took his car in for oil change, and when they were test driving it, a log fell off a truck and like hit his hood.
Ooh.
And so then they had to.
That's what they told me.
Yeah. So they're like, we got to keep your car longer because now we got to fix it. So
they did like for 10 days fixing it, which is fine. They fixed it, and it didn't happen when I was driving. So that was great. But that car was so light that basically like four dudes could just help push it out and it was fine. So that was all right.
Yeah. I remember riding in that car with a larger gentleman that we know and like.
To a brewery game.
It was kind of, like lopsided a little bit.
Did it pull to that
side?
Yeah.
I remember driving it thinking like, something's wrong with the car. I'm like, oh, no, this is probably exceeding the weight limit of this. Yeah.
It was four dudes and one was a generally larger dude.
And you probably couldn't sit in the middle because there wasn't enough room on either side.
No, they were in the middle as well. It was just a tiny car.
So tiny. But yeah, no, it's been kind of nice actually, whether... We're going to heat up a little bit this weekend ahead of pollination, which can be iffy, but pollination's iffy at this point with
variables.
It's just an uneven. Yeah, you could write uneven on every cornfield.
It is kind of neat to see the roller coaster fields. Like, not neat from the perspective of, like, I don't want to see that, but
it's
visually remarkable.
Yes, I like that. Because it isn't fun to watch, and some guys got tabletop fields, but in general, it's all over.
And some of those tabletops are deceiving, because if you actually go in the field, like it's just that the headlands are tabletop, and then you get inside, and you're like, oh, it's
not as good.
Like shorter here, taller there. Just trying to time fungicide too is interesting. Yep. With some of the shorter stuff will tassel with the taller stuff, or at least close. But in some of the other, there's always, in a lot of these fields, going to be plants that either aren't ready to tassel or will tassel much later. So it's kind of a do your best type year where get as close as you can to the majority of the field tasseling for that application. But
yeah, I've tried to tell guys not to overthink that.
Right.
You'll be, or the other way to say is, go a little on the earlier side,
yeah.
Because you can be too late, but you shouldn't be too early necessarily.
Right.
So, yeah, that has been tricky, man. Because you've always, I've even heard, like, co-op guys in the past, like, I want those silks just out. You know, I want a Tesla, but I want to see those silks. That Cobb's got to be there. And this year, you're not going to have that on every plant.
Going to be difficult to do that.
Even, like, rootworm beetles, as they're coming out. Have you guys been seeing? I've just been starting to see them.
Yeah. Yep.
And those will be interesting, how they attack those areas with the early silks out, and what they're going to do will be interesting.
I do think, though, I had to go to Cedar Rapids last weekend, and we have the worst corn in the country. It's not even close.
Like, as soon as you get out of Wisconsin,
as soon as you get south of Oshkosh, like, there's not a bad field from Beaver Dam to Cedar Rapids. It is pretty beautiful.
The corn markets would agree with that.
Yes.
Right.
So, yes, it is tough when all the other areas, like, complain about how bad they are, and you're just like,
Those rolling hills of southwest Wisconsin and northeast Iowa, you can really get a good feel of the cornfields because they're all inside the hills, and you can see for miles how beautiful they are, and they are not rolling.
There's no roller coaster fields.
No roller coaster fields south of us. So
you also went to the, like, corn capital Fair. Of the Midwest.
Fair.
But, I would... If they're doing well, that's what the markets see. And
right.
That's
right.
How that works.
I had a farmer tell me yesterday, every year someone has to take it in the shorts, and I guess it's our year.
Yeah.
I feel like we're not... In proportion, we take it in the shorts more often than other places, but I'm sure other places would say that as well.
We need new shorts. Yes. We've taken it too many times in our shorts.
Find different ones.
All right. You guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yeah.
This grain harvest is hitting. It's been moving along. I mean, there's some guys to the south of us that are done. Other guys starting this week. To the north of us, they're probably a little bit waiting a little bit yet. But in general, if you drive around the countryside, you're probably going to start seeing those combines rolling. In fact, I was by a field yesterday where there were two really big, like 30-foot head combines in one field. I was like, ooh, all right, kicking it into gear. But we seem to get this question all the time. Every year, it doesn't matter. Some years it's because fertilizer price is high or wheat price is low or, just a number of reasons why we get this question. But what is the value of straw? Is it worth taking it off the field? Should I just leave it out there, just chop it back? Like, what do I do? And the answer every year is...
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to, obviously you should think it through. And if you're putting fertilizer back to replace taking the straw off, like if you have manure, for example, there's opportunities there. But just valuing straw can be difficult. I looked, so they didn't have anything up this year, but last year, so around this time in 2023, the UW Haymarket Report had a section on straw. And said, so for oat, barley, wheat straw, small squares were around $5 a bale with a range of 4 to 7 last year. Large square bales were average 52 with a range of 30 to 75. And large round bale straw averaged 62 with a range of 37 to $90. So whether you're buying or selling, you have to value not only the fertilizer cost that you're taking off the field, but also the cost of, are you baling it? Are they baling it? So there's lots of things to consider. And I know, Todd, you brought up a fertilizer calculator here to kind of help figure out that value.
Yeah, so obviously when we get this question, like Matt said, we get it a lot. It does seem most of my growers always ask it in the thing of what am I removing? And I think that's unique. I mean, straw removes a lot of nutrients compared to grain, But we never asked that with the grain.
Right.
Ever. I mean, you ask it, but not in this context. Like, they don't say, well, I don't know if I'm going to sell. I might just blow back some of my grain because.
Yeah. Just going to chop that corn right back.
You know, and, yeah. and even in corn stalks and soybean straw, when that's sold, I don't get that in that context as much. So for some reason, only in this wheat area, then it's more tied to like, well, what am I giving up? So that they're feeling like, wow, I already took a lot off. I already got to take the grain, you know, and in the other crops, we rarely take the soybean stubble.
You get it a little bit. I mean, a little bit, maybe.
But in sometimes stalks for maybe a beef guy, they'll take it. But it just seems like straw becomes that question. And, you know, let's be real, there's a lot of plain states, wheat's mainly grown. They typically do not harvest the straw. Like, it's not even a thing. So,
right.
So that is a unique part where there is a question to it that, well, do I need to take it? Don't I? And what I've also noticed is when they ask the question, they already seem to have their mind made up right. whether or not they are going to do it or not.
They're just looking for the confirmation of like...
Kind of. Yeah. So that's a tricky part too, is whatever I tell them for fertilizer value, it seems like they already knew yes or no whether they wanted to leave it out there or not. So that is part of this question that you do got to think through is, have you already made your mind up and you're just trying to confirm, or are you really trying to look into the dollars and cents? Because in general, whenever I do look into the dollars and cents, it is worthwhile to sell the straw. You are going to make a profit on it.
Sure.
It just depends on whether you want to take the time or you want to give up those nutrients and put them back. So right now, using some sort of current urea, DAP, potash prices, the value of the straw is right around $23 a ton, including the nitrogen, which that's a unique one too. This is a calculator right from UW. They've got a really nice spreadsheet you can download, and it kind of gives you the value of your residues.
Yep.
So it's the crop residue value calculator. And they've got an excluding the nitrogen value, which is at $15 a ton, which I thought that was an interesting thing because the nitrogen is, usually I do include it because you're giving something up. However, when you're talking straw, that's actually quite carbon-based, and we don't usually think of like that crediting us a bunch of nitrogen
right.
per se, but there is still, I still like to use the value of all the nutrients, and what this never takes into account is organic matter. Some of the micronutrients you might be, you know, losing and some of the other things in it.
We do this similarly with manure too, right?
Right.
You don't take those things into consideration when you're, quote, valuing your manure either. You don't take the organic matter. You don't take the micros in it. It just kind of, it's NPK. What's the NPK value, right?
I think that's a good segue, Bill, into one of the things that I think is important is most of the time, not always, but one of the things skitters, if you consider is if you are selling your straw, just get manure back
right.
in some way. Have a trade yep. because manure, you are going to get true value of nitrogen there, and you are going to get P and K, and you can replace it in a more, you know, natural, good state of a good fertilizer and manure. So that is one of the things that, like, it's as if you're planning to replace the nutrients anyway, how are you doing that? And if manure is involved, this becomes extremely easy of an equation of, okay, take the straw off, you know, put the manure back. And some guys where they're not taking the straw off, you still probably want that manure if you can, because all the carbon that's there, it'll help break that down
yeah.
and start working on it. So yeah, Matt, your question on the current fertilizer value, a lot of times I usually do just round up to $30 a ton. Most years it's $30 a ton in fertilizer value. So that's kind of the basis I make sure guys think about and make sure that they do replace that nutrient. They aren't just, well, you know, now I'm just going to take extra profits. If you're not going to get manure, that you do get the fertilizer value back on it too.
Right. And it's always good to have that per ton basis because a lot of years, maybe it doesn't vary a lot, but you can have really good straw years where you're taking, you know, a lot of extra tonnage off, and other years where you're not taking as much. So you got to kind of, you still got to do a little bit of math to figure out exactly what you're taking away for replacement side, and that's a good segue into, you know, are you planning to replace the straw nutrients? Like you mentioned, manure It's always a good kind of timing for manure if you have your own manure or if you're buying manure, because it's a not as busy of a time to get it hauled out there.
Well, especially this year, because
right.
we haven't gotten the manure on our hay fields like we normally would, do with all the rain we've gotten. So I think the good news is probably this year is we had that January, February, March that we could get a lot of manure out, and guys did. So maybe they are sitting pretty good. But normally it's like, can we get to wheat? Can we get to wheat? You know, with those manure pits, like we got a little out on our hay. We got to get to wheat. Well, this year it's like.
Yeah, we got the extra.
Haven't had to get that out. We couldn't get it out on the hay because of how wet and the damage we did just in harvesting, much less emptying any manure pits.
Right. Plus, we're getting extra water in our manure pits.
Right.
With all the rain, too. So that cap space in the manure is running out pretty fast. So the other options are just traditional fertilizer. You can go out and put, you know, some in the fall, some in the spring. Well, do it the spring before, but even this calculation will help you figure out if you're not doing the manure side, what you need to put back as far as fertilizer value ahead of whatever crop you're going to follow your wheat with. You know, some guys seed it down. That's why manure can be nice, too, if you're doing the fall seeding. Get a good nutrient base there before you get everything seeded down. If it's going to corn or something else the following year, you know, you can plan for those nutrients. Soybeans, I don't think, are as common unless you're just doing like a... I do know a couple of people that do a wheat-soybean rotation. So, yeah, planning for that next crop, not only, you know, your normal fertilization, but kind of hopefully making up for any of that straw removal. If you're going to go with cover crops, that can be, you know, you can still do the fertilizer side because those cover crops will take up some of that nutrient and, you know, you get longer growing opportunity and the winter for some of that stuff to break down if you're doing non-overwintering cover crops, or if you have overwintering ones, then you're hopefully just, yeah, burning it down the following spring to get that to break down.
And Matt, that's a big gap now from... You know, we're harvesting
right
end of July, early August here. Now we got a big gap from when we're going to have green growing again in May next year. So I really encourage farmers that this is a great time. If you haven't tried cover crops, this would be a great time to try anything, whether you want to get fancy and do the 18-way mixes or just something as simple as 2 pounds of radish or just try some radish. I mean, you're really going to get good growth. You're going to like it, and it's going to be dead next spring, and you can go and plant your corn. It's just a long time to leave that ground fallow, especially if you're going to put manure on it, and then you leave it tilled.
Right.
There's a lot of
erosion potential.
A lot of time for damage.
Yep.
This I've seen, like you say, Bill, is the easiest entry for cover crops and probably the lowest hanging fruit that we're missing at times when guys...
Yep.
Just decide to sort of like, I'm good. Or you also have the wheat itself. A lot of time you get volunteer wheat.
Fair.
Yep. So if you kind of spread, there's a name for it, it's not coming to me, chaff spreader. But if you spread the chaff and then drop the straw, it'll kind of spread out the wheat better, which is good.
Still, getting the thick windrow.
Right. The windrow doesn't work. That is not. But if you had a chaff spreader, you spread that out evenly, you're actually in general seeding a cover crop, almost, but it's partly a component that you could be, and then you just throw some barley radish with that.
I'll have an update in a couple of weeks on the one field that was too wet to spray or plant or do anything, so he just left the volunteer wheat, and we're going to harvest
sure.
it.
There you go.
So I think that this is a good, especially if the question is, do I leave my straw out or not? And then if the alternative is take, what I always like to say is I'd rather you harvest the straw and plant a cover crop.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be ahead on, you know, biology in that soil. You're going to be ahead on things by taking that money from selling the straw and investing it back in manure if you can, but just even in cover crop. I think you're way further ahead because you're getting a living root in that soil through a very critical time in August here. That August and early September time, that the soil is still very active, and if we're not utilizing that, then
even if it's just oats, like
yeah, right. Right.
Just some oats, right. Are cheap now. They aren't worth much anymore either. Just
there's still enough. But
spread them out there, and
I would agree is on the cover crop side too. You don't have to don't overthink it and get something super expensive. Just get that soil covered in the cheapest possible way you can.
All right, and then whether you're doing cover crops or even just looking to do some sort of fall forage, because you need to make up a little bit of the difference on your forage this year, there's opportunities there. But again, if you're going to take a forage from what you plant, you have to understand that you're taking more nutrients that way too. So there's still a lot of calculations no matter what plan you do here, whether you're going to figure on putting in fertilizer back, you're going to use cover crops in conjunction with fertilizer or manure, or even take forage on those cover crops for the fall. Still pays to figure out, you know, what you're taking off the field in tonnage for the straw, and if you're going to take some sort of forage to make sure that you're not shorting the next crop. So it's important to keep all these things in mind as you're out there harvesting your wheat and thinking about the next steps. That the biggest thing you want to do is whether you take straw, don't take straw, is not short yourself for the future. So keep in mind your fertility and what nutrients you're taking off the field. All right, now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So Landis has got a secret weapon, military-grade AI tech that can connect the farm dots. So farmers and agronomists today are virtually drowning in data, but one Midwest cooperative has a new secret weapon. Landis is out of Des Moines, Iowa, and they have seemingly struck digital farm gold. They are working with Tesseract Ventures to bring military-grade predictive data analysis straight from high-tech battlefield to the farm. And they're offering a new software called Synthesis. So what is Synthesis? Well, it automates the collection and combination of data across an incredibly wide swath of sources, everything from satellites and drones to on-farm sensors, weather stations, and even disparate farm machinery brands. It leverages algorithms originally designed for advanced military intelligence applications to literally synthesize all the relevant data for a select field or operation into three modules: plan, perform, and prove, that farmers and their agronomists can use to make digital simulations of the field. So they call them digital twins of the real-life field. And the farm management process goes from an inexact multiple-variable guessing game to laser-sharp predictive level lasers.
This is fun. It's like a farm simulator, but...
It is, but with your own field.
But with your real farm, yeah. Right.
So no more guessing. For example, what happened to yield and farmer's bottom line if farmer Joe were to put on a generic fungicide at V5. Platform is able to wormhole its way into the future, visualizing real-time impact of various management decisions for the farmer before any action is taken. So just like we were talking about, you know, doing those calculations on removal, well, here you go. This program might be able to do it for you and tell you, okay, if you take straw, you're looking at this. If you don't take straw, you're looking at that. So it's kind of a cool technology. We'll see how it works out for them. They're developing and releasing Synthesis to the greater farm universe. And so hopefully that'll be a good thing. They also have a Sky Scout drone-enabled scouting service that can integrate into the Synthesis platform. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes, if it gets widespread. So go from planning bombing runs to planting corn. It's kind of cool. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So today we're going to talk the history of wheat and why we still grow it here. And one time we grew a lot of wheat in Wisconsin. Wisconsin was one of the top wheat production states. So we've got to go back to the early and mid-1800s. Immigrants began to settle and begin farming here in Wisconsin. The first, we had the Yankees from New England and upstate New York, followed by the Germans and Norwegians, and then Belgians, Irish, Poles, and Scots. Focus of farmers in the state's early decades was on growing wheat. In 1860, Wisconsin was the second largest state for wheat production in the United States. By 1870, however, wheat cultivation began to fail, compelling farmers to turn to other crops like hops, tobacco, potatoes, and hemp. One of the main reasons that we didn't become the dairy state until the late 1800s was because it was considered women's work. Women were expected to milk and feed cows as well as make the butter and cheese. That assumption changed in the 1880s when William Dempster Hoard, the founder of Hoard's Dairyman magazine and the state's governor, encouraged men to rethink their focus, calling king wheat a dying industry and queen cow an up-and-coming opportunity. So there you go. That's why we've transferred from wheat to dairy. Largely due to Hoard's encouragement, entrepreneurs began building cheese factories around the state because the road system was not suitable to transport milk to major markets.
So, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I like the king wheat and the
and queen cow.
Queen cow.
I thought alfalfa was the queen.
Oh yeah, you got the queen of forages. Queen of forages. And the
there can be king more than one queen. Haven't you guys heard of Henry VIII?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. Or on your Android phone, you need to download an app like Podcast Addict, or there are many other podcast apps out there. You can also listen to on your computer or your smartphone in your browser. Just go to tilthegg.com/podcasts. And we are also available on Amazon Music now, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for some cool beans. That's corny and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Despite a automobile accident, the Wienermobile, the hot doggers are safe. So this just happened a couple days ago. The Wienermobile and a car were going north on a tollway when the Wienermobile struck the car, lost control, and rolled over. And if you do a search for this, you'll see the Wienermobile on its side. But thankfully, the hot doggers are okay. Happened at about 11:15 a.m. on I-294 near Roosevelt Road. The state troopers were called out for a crash involving the Wienermobile and a Hyundai. And I can only imagine how that went over the radio. Yeah, we got a wiener on its side on I-24.
And a Hyundai right next to it.
Oscar Mayer's spokesman said they're grateful that everyone involved is safe. There were no injuries. Does the Wienermobile have airbags, you think? Like, I'm kind of wondering
it
what the safety...
Look like
I bet it does.
It's got to, but it doesn't look like they're...
Yeah, you can't see in the picture. It doesn't look like anything, yeah. Any visual sign of an airbag going off, but yeah.
Was this in Illinois somewhere?
Illinois, yeah.
Yeah, I figured. Driver, yeah. Darn Illinois driver probably cut him off. And
I wonder what the max speed of the Wienermobile is, too. Like, does it struggle to hit 70, or?
It's probably pretty aerodynamic.
Yeah, you would think. There's. I wonder if in the early designs there was a spoiler on the end of the...
Well, the way the hot dog kind of curves, right. Maybe it already is its own little spoiler.
Could be. But yes, all the hot doggers are doing fine, and you know, there's not too many Wienermobiles out there anymore. So hopefully this isn't a major blow to the Oscar Mayer company. But they say no, there's no such thing as bad publicity. So,
so you think this is an inside job?
I don't know.
Let's crash the Wienermobile.
Let's get the Wienermobile back in the news cycle.
Yeah. It's not damaged completely. Like,
no, the wiener got like scraped a little bit.
Yeah, you could definitely fix this thing.
It's not good to scrape your wiener.
No.
But, yeah, no, overall, I mean, some dents.
Yeah.
Popping out, but doesn't, even the glass doesn't look like any of the windshields really busted out or cracked or... Yeah, what? There's no timetable on the return of the Wienermobile.
Okay.
So, all right, now we'll move into our That's Corny This Week, which is 91% of North Carolina corn is in fair condition or worse. So they are in an actual drought in North Carolina, and crop is kind of shriveling up on them. There have been some improvements this week, but in general, a large chunk of the corn down there is not in very good condition, so we're not alone, Bill. It's not just us.
Well, that's good. We're the opposite, right?
We had the extreme wet there, having the extreme dry this year.
I guess the good for us is when it's dry, usually there isn't much crop. If it's that dry,
right?
For us, at least we're going to have something.
So it said that some farmers are attempting to salvage their corn crop by chopping it for silage. Which is...
That's never good.
Generally not a great. So as of Monday, or this last Monday, or I don't know if it's last Monday or this Monday, corn conditions, they were at 85% of the corn was silking, which is 3 percentage points ahead of the 5-year average and last year this time. 43% of the corn has reached the dough stage. And 32% of the corn has achieved full dough. So they are definitely ahead of us in stage. So it makes sense why they're starting to chop. But yeah, hopefully they see a little bit of improvement. But it being that far along, it's hard to really make up much ground now at this point. So, all right. Now we'll finish things up here with our Field Good Friday. And today we're going to talk Hogs for Hunger, which is making strides at the local level. So the Hogs for Hunger program in Missouri, the Missouri Farmers Care, is taking a more local approach this year. There are two paths for Missouri hog farmers and swine exhibitors to participate in the Drive to Feed Kids for Hunger program this year. Executive Director of the program, Ashley McCarty, says that the Missouri State Fair was an opportunity for people to make donations. We need helping feed our communities and keep those pounds of pork close to home to be able to meet the needs of local families. So this year's effort is a far more local effort and may be more personalized. In 2023, there were 33,000 servings of pork from donations at the Missouri State Fair and the Mighty Eagles 4-H Club. They also had many other supporters as well. Those who donate are eligible for a $125 processing fee reimbursement from the Missouri Farmers Care Foundation. It's the third year that a 4-H member and president of the Mighty Eagles 4-H Club, Lucas Alexander, is donating a hog. And he says he really likes this project because not only is it easy and simple, but he's interested in raising protein for the world to eat, so willing to make that donation. So kind of a cool program they've got going down there in Missouri, and I'm sure there's other programs like it across the country, but it's just kind of a neat thing that they do. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about wheat straw and whether you take it or not, how to kind of figure out the value of that straw and the nutrients you're removing from the field. In our spotlight, we took a look at a new program called Synthesis that might help simulate your farm decisions. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of wheat in Wisconsin. Cool Beans this week was the Wienermobile crash, but no one was injured. That's corny. North Carolina is facing pretty severe drought conditions. And our Feel Good Friday was Hogs for Hunger out of Missouri, making a difference for their local communities. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.